Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Hey, warm welcome to the show. So glad you're with me today. Happy Monday. Can I say happy Monday? I think I just did. So it does not matter. Awfully glad you're here. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you enjoyed some of the nice weather because it is summertime and it is the time of year to be outside. I'm more of an avid indoorsman. I try to not go outside because of my fair skin. I got so many sunburns as a kid. They were epic. You know, because you didn't have sunblock when you were a kid. You didn't put sunblock on. You put on mop and glow. So you'd go out and I would come in with such legendary sunburns, I'd be purple. And I would think, this can't be good. This is going to be something that's going to come back to haunt me later in life. And now it is. So what the heck. So I've got a great show. We've got my friend Patrick Albany is going to be on with us in just a minute. And then Cal Beisner is also going to be with us from the Cornwall Alliance. That's all in hour one. In hour two, we've got Dr. Paul Meyer. You might know him from the Minerith Meyer Clinics. He also has got the Meyer Clinics now, and he's got offices in many cities. They see up to about 3,000 people a week. So he's going to talk about brain chemicals and the four different kinds of chemicals in your brain, some of which are caused by your genetics. So we're going to talk about that as well. I found in the news this interesting. A Virginia man bought a $300,000 car and totaled it on day one. I think he was driving too fast. But there you go. You have a $300,000 car. You don't even make it through the day, and you total it. So I just want to urge all you drivers out there, slow down. All right? There's my free tip. In 1985, Amazon opened for business as an online bookseller. And today, I saw that Jeffrey Bezos, the guy who started it in 1995, is worth $150 billion. So he can go out to dinner and afford to order the appetizer. You know, which a lot of people can't do. It's like, let's just get the entree. Don't really want to spring for the appetizer. Mr. Bezos can buy the appetizer, the dessert, and then the restaurant if he feels like it. All right, let's take a break. And I love scripture. You know that. You know I love it. So I want to start with Kim, and she is reading Colossians chapter 3, verses 10 and 11. Thank you, Kim.
Put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like Him. In this new life, it doesn't matter if you are a Jew or a Gentile, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbaric, uncivilized, slave or free. Christ is all that matters, and He lives in all of us.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Our pastor recently preached on the healing of the blind man from John chapter 9. My guess is you know the story. Jesus and his disciples were still in Jerusalem. They encounter a man born blind from birth. And after some interaction with Jesus, he winds up making some mud from spittle, places it on the blind man's eyes, and when he washes it off, he can see. It is an amazing account of Jesus' healing power. But it really started out as a theological question or debate. Sadly, isn't that where many of us find ourselves today? We look at people and judge them on their issues or problems rather than seeing them as someone for whom Jesus died. Faith Radio exists to help believers connect faith to life. And a part of that mission is to encourage you to share the good news of Jesus Christ in a grace-filled way. Thank you for praying and supporting this ministry. You see, together we are making a difference for Christ.
Thank you for listening to Faith Radio, where you can find relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching to help you grow in your faith. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. Find out more about your favorite programs and features and find helpful articles on relevant topics such as marriage and family, finances, health and wellness, and spiritual growth, all at myfaithradio.com.
You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Faith Radio is a media outreach of University of Northwestern in St. Paul. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. Tune in anytime to hear relevant Bible preaching from Chuck Swindoll, Rick Warren, James McDonald, David Jeremiah, Colin Smith, and many more. Listen to family-focused teaching from Dennis Rainey in Family Life Today, Jim Daly, and Focus on the Family, and other great programs on Faith Radio.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
My guest is Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. He's now here to join me in an expanded bilateral conversation. Hello, Patrick.
This would be a summit. I heard the entrance music. I quickly got to the microphone.
Oh, that was awfully smart of you.
You have my backup music ready?
Oh, yeah.
That's Jarabe Tapatio.
Exactly. All right.
Yeah, the Mexican hat dance, because as you know, we're trying to teach our dog to use the potty outside, and they say you have to do like a big celebration if he succeeds. So we hired a mariachi band.
Well, it's not cost effective, but I appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, it works. Hi, yeah. How are you?
I'm good. Say, you're from the Windy City. You born and raised in Chicago?
I was.
I know you spent many years there, your youth, I will say. Now, the Windy City had all kinds of protests over the weekend because police, unfortunately, fatally shot a 37-year-old man, and the encounter was described in some outlets as another police shooting of an unarmed black man. Turns out that he was quite armed. And it's so disturbing for me on so many levels. I just don't like the violence. I don't like the shooting. I don't like the videos they show. All to say, some of this is brought on by people that don't follow police orders.
And I think that the more fearful officers are to react because they don't want to end up in a drawn-out court battle and a drawn-out, you know, I mean, obviously any shooting is tragic. Even a justified shooting is tragic. But I've seen this play out before. And, you know, if you get to the point where police officers say, I can't defend myself without it destroying my life, I'm just not going to go into that building. That's, you know, I think we underestimate or we don't look at what does human nature tell you? You know, if somebody were to say to you, hey, look, we're going to confiscate all the money you make over $50,000. Everybody gets a $50,000 check from the government. Some of you are going to have to work and earn it. But after $50,000, you don't get to keep the rest of it. We're going to distribute it to other people. Approximately how many days of the year over the $50,000 mark would you work?
Not many.
Not well, maybe half a day where you say, oops, I made a mistake. So, you know, it's if you say to an officer, look, you're not going to be able to defend yourself. You have to wait for them to shoot at you first. So if you see a weapon, don't do anything and don't draw your weapon or don't fire a weapon until he's fired off a couple of rounds. And then you're allowed to defend yourself and please try to hit him in the big toe.
Right. Let me ask you a more rhetorical question. Why do the police pick on criminals?
Oh, the nerve.
The nerve.
I remember I was living in Los Angeles during the great drive-by shooting epidemic of the 80s. And you know, part of it was when the media started really covering stuff like that. And then we started having helicopters would follow people around and so it's not that this stuff wasn't happening before, but now you heard about it a lot. Mm-hmm. And I remember part of the problem is people said, well, we've got a lot of crime in some of these really bad areas, and there's a lot of drug dealing. And so they started passing some laws that basically put out much harsher penalties for people dealing in certain types of drugs. Crack cocaine was one of them. And pretty soon some of the shootings had started to dwindle down because they were locking people up. And then people complained, you're locking up everybody that lives here. And I'm not sure we can win. So then the complaint went the other way. And it, unfortunately, yeah, it's kind of is that the Willie Sutton thing. You know, why do you rob the banks? Because that's where the money is. Why are the cops picking on the bad guys? Because they're doing the crime? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about the person that wants to end their life and they don't want to commit suicide? They'd just rather be shot by the police.
Which...
I'm sorry, yeah, that happens more than we want to admit to, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I know that not that I've ever had the thought of having myself removed from this life prematurely, but I know that when you and I have discussed it, we said our chosen method would be to be bored to death.
Right.
You know, if somebody could, if that was actually a real thing, we'd say, great, I'll just, watch old episodes of Green Acres until I can't take it anymore and I fall asleep and don't wake up. I think that, yeah, you're right. People do choose that method, but what a very strange way to go out. Is it to make a statement? Is it to collect on an insurance plan?
You don't know. You really don't know. But that is an option that's out there, and it puts police officers in a terrible situation. I mean, this guy had a semi-automatic weapon with an extra magazine on him, and he is not cooperating with the police, and he's reaching for his weapon. What are they supposed to do?
Have you ever seen any of those videos where they'll take somebody and they'll put him through about a half a day, you know, of some police training, and then they'll say, okay, we're going to put you now in a, you know, a simulated situation. So in the back of their mind, they know that they're never really in any danger. But then they have them have to confront bad guys. And as soon as these actor bad guys, and they know that nobody's really going to shoot them. This is all pretend. But as soon as a bad guy makes a move for something, they pull out their weapon and they fire a blank. And they're like, I couldn't help it. I was so scared.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what these officers, and I know they're paid to be brave and to not be scared by those things, but I don't know. Can you really do that? Can you really shake that, that fear off and say, oh, this guy, I don't know if that's really a gun. He might just be reaching for, you know, a present for me, very nice gift.
Yeah. I thought the city of Chicago didn't allow people to have guns.
They don't. They have some of the strictest gun control laws in the country, which is why we don't talk about it.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Patrick, let me take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Patrick J. Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines. It is 16 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Patrick Albanese is my guest from prestigious West Des Moines, my friend and colleague. Patrick, when we went to break, we were talking about how disturbing gun violence is, and I hate it, and you hate it. And I was thinking of this tragedy of the episode in Chicago. And when I watched the video, I literally, my heart sunk, and I felt big tears welling up in my eyes, and I hated it because I thought, I'm not watching a movie. That was a real person that just died.
You remember, after 9/11, there was a movie that came out called United 93.
Oh yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, and my wife and I went to go see it, and I think we were 5 minutes into the movie, and we realized, what is this feeling that I'm having? And you realized this is disturbing because what we're about to see happened. This happened, and. You normally you go into a movie and you think, well, you go, well, come on, that's not a real planet. they just blew up a planet. That's not a real planet. That's not a real spaceship. There's this suspension of disbelief, but you're never fully, 100% sold on anything. You know it's all going to be just fine and that the hero is going to be the winner in the end and there's going to be this tremendous turnaround and it's going to be a happy ending. And then that movie started and we realized, this is real. It's not a happy ending. It's a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what goes with that video. You say, this is real, folks. This really happened. And these were real people with real emotions in this situation. And, you see it, you realize these officers, they don't want to shoot the guy, but they have to shoot the guy or he'll shoot them. And you say, who wants to be in that? That's just a horrific situation. You know?
Yeah, I saw the video and my heart sank. And I thought, that's a real person.
It's a real person.
Not a movie. It's like when I went and saw Titanic and I had to leave 45 minutes early. And I never really even heard how it ended. But
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you – did you see the first Star Trek? It's got a very similar ending.
All right. So did you watch any of the Peter Strzok interview?
I make a rule now. I can't watch this stuff live. I'm watching what is happening to a lot of my friends. They watched the what do you call it today? The press conference, the summit, and they're all, you know, spouting the treason word about Trump today. And I go, you're letting this affect your life, and of course politics, it does touch your life. But you still have to interact with the people that love you and that you love and are close to you. And if you're going to allow things to destroy you this much, you're going to be a horrible person to be around. So I tend to watch excerpts later, and I do it in small doses because, A, I don't want to sit down for 8 hours of watching testimony.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of, you know, I'm trying to fix the, you know, the dirt spots in my backyard. I bought a plugger and everything. I just have to get good grass, you know, whenever I can go over to the golf course and snag some. But, yeah, it's like I'd rather do that.
Monday's caddy day, by the way. There's very few members out on those days, just so you know.
Oh, God. Well, I try to go at like 5 a.m. before the sprinklers and the lights go on.
Right.
Because when the grass is wet, you try to plug some pieces. You just can't get a good sample.
Right, right.
Just take it from the greens. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I watched excerpts of it, and he certainly looked like a man on the offensive, the defensive. I think it was kind of a combination of both. He sort of did the attack. I think it was interesting that Lisa Page, the woman that he was having the affair with, she was supposed to testify. And then she delayed it and said, oh, I lost some of the information or whatever. And people were all speculating. They said, oh, you know what? She wants to watch him testify so she can get her story straight. And I disagree, because I think that she might have actually, you know, started cooperating with the investigation into Strzok. I still want to call him Strzok because I don't get the, where's that Z? I've never heard of a silent Z.
I haven't either. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, I think the guy should be arrested for that alone, but that's me. So I think that actually she wanted him to go first so that he could not alter his testimony to either match hers or to set her up to be the fall person. I think the Department of Justice said, we want you to go after him. He needs to, because if he watches you first, he might alter what he has to say so that he comes out smelling like a rose. He did not come out smelling like a rose. He came out smelling.
Mm.
More like Pete Rose, actually. It was a very bad bet.
Yeah.
So that was one angry guy. Did you watch much of it?
Well, I watched a little of it. I actually listened to a bunch of it on the radio, and I could see his contempt over the radio. He was sneering. It was like, I'm better than you. It that's what it felt like when I watched it. But what do I know?
Yeah, he was that Colonel Jessup, the Jack Nicholson character.
Yes, in exactly.
A few Good Men. Although, actually, the way Nicholson's putting on the weight, I think the movie's called A Few Good Menus. But yeah, it's like, you can't, you know, he thought he was so superior. It's like, you can't even handle the truth of what it is that I do.
Right.
So what if I break the law? I'm keeping you safe. Well, it had that feel to it. I there was a point in time I thought, is he's going to just say, you can't handle the truth. And if you can't do it like Nicholson, you shouldn't do it.
I agree.
I thought he was going to. He seemed to be that upset.
Yeah, the drama, it was quite high. And so there was some entertainment factor going on. But it was, in my opinion, kind of a sad reality once again.
A sad reality. And, you know, you can get discouraged because you can say, well, it looks like maybe some bad guys are going to get away with things. We have to quit, I feel, anyway, for whatever it's worth, adjusted for inflation, my 2 cents. Hey, you can't let the entirety of your life be dependent on people. Gosh, there was a book. There's a book. It's a very old, old book with lots of chapters. It has something about that. Something about not relying on that. God will take care of it. I think it was the Bible.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, sometimes you have to say, you know what? Maybe it's just maybe the bad guy is going to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be upset. But you have to build your foundation. You have to build it on something that's much more solid than people,
mm-hmm.
than your fellow man. We're flawed human beings, every last one of us. Build it on something solid.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I, we like funny people. We like people that make us laugh. And at one point, I think Sacha Baron Cohen, his little Ollie G character, had made me laugh on occasion because he said some very stupid things. But now I think he's taken a little bit too far, and it's gotten to be kind of a shameless show about him impersonating a disabled war veteran. So I think he's in a lot of trouble. He interviewed people like Dick Cheney and Sarah Palin and Bernie Sanders and tries to get people to be at their absolute most embarrassing worst. And this is what I guess we call comedy now.
Yeah, and I don't know if I should blame YouTube for that. You know, that we have this. Did you know that we have the attention span, according to Microsoft recently, our attention span is now down to 7 seconds, approximately 7 seconds. And a goldfish has an attention span of 8 seconds. So we're worse than that fish in that tank that just looks around in a circle all day long.
Yeah, but he's got that little bridge he can go swim under and stuff. That
is true.
That can take
Plus
8 seconds.
Yeah, the guy with the diving helmet. Yeah.
What is he doing in there? He's going to have to come up for air at some point.
Well, it's amazing how much air he has. That thing is still blowing bubbles. I think with Cohen, it's one of those mistakes that sometimes these comedians will make, and I say these comedians in the most derogatory fashion, but they stopped looking for what was funny, and they almost went agenda or political, and they were searching for an outcome. And instead of looking for the true humor in something, they said, I'm going to make somebody look bad. That's my goal here. And I don't think any of us feel comfortable with that. You know, maybe, if you hate Dick Cheney, you might watch the segment he did and say, yes, you got him. But yeah, I think you feel a little bit dirty on the inside because you realize these are dirty tricks and it's not really funny. And it furthers this spreading of hate, which we've got to get away from, folks, because I think it's getting pretty bad. I think it's getting pretty bad.
No, I'm with you. And when these comedians, like you say, Patrick, they use their audience or their talent to pretty much just create trouble for politicians and the agenda. Well, I don't know what's happened to good old clean laughing and feeling good about what you're laughing at.
Yeah, and there also seems to be an air of, look how smart I am. I'm smarter than these people, and you should listen to me. Well, you and I know a lot of comedians, and we know that that's just not true.
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah, and we're throwing ourselves in that group. I'm not claiming to be necessarily some smart guy. I'm hopefully claiming to be somewhat observant.
Mm-hmm. But I think he's being now investigated for stealing valor. You can't do that. You can't impersonate a veteran. You can't just show up and have medals on or have a resume that isn't true. That's an offense to the military.
Yeah, and he takes it a step further and impersonates a disabled veteran, which, at what point in time is that funny?
Never.
In fact, I remember watching the Borat movie, and it made me pretty uncomfortable throughout most of it. I said, either this is the greatest put-on I have ever witnessed, or he's really duping people.
Yeah. Patrick, always good to chat. Thanks very much for being on the show. It is 29 minutes after the hour. Patrick Albanese has been my guest from prestigious West Des Moines. Be right back.
Jesus Christ changes lives. He always has. He always will. It's up to us to be the messenger.
That is so true. Are you available to be used by God at the spur of the moment? Hi, I'm Steve Douglas for Making Your Life Count. Christian counselor Dwight Bain shares how God can use any of us to help someone who is struggling.
A man had decided to leave his wife. They were a young couple. And God just challenged me. I bumped into him in a parking lot and I said, listen, what you're doing is absolutely wrong. You need to grow up and you need to change. He kind of puffed up and got real frustrated, but he started to cry. He said, I know what I'm doing is wrong. I just don't know how to get out of it. God allowed me to lead him to Christ, and today they're blessed with a couple of kids, and they're just another successful young family.
Whether it's in a parking lot or in your very own backyard, God can use you to make an eternal difference in people's lives.
Welcome back to the show. Bill Arnold here. It's 32 minutes after the hour. Dr. Cal Beisner is founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. It's a network of over 60 Christian theologians, natural scientists, economists, and other scholars helping us think and process through all of what we hear in the news. And he's my guest on the program. Hello, Cal.
Hello, how are you, Bill? Glad to be with you.
I'm good. Thank you so much. I'm just looking at your photo once again, and I'm thinking, what was your first car?
What was my first car?
Yeah, I'm going to guess a Mustang convertible.
Nope, it was a 1968 Chevrolet Bel Air station wagon. It was kind of like a gunless tank.
I'm guessing that was a hand-me-down, Cal. You didn't buy that off the lot, did you?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a hand-me-down, all right.
And how long did it run before it absolutely went south?
Well, I sold it at 215,000 miles and was really shocked because to my classified ad, to which I expected no responses, I got a bunch. And it turned out that the guys were wanting to buy this so that they could junk the chassis and body, but just pull out the short block Chevy V8 engine that was absolutely fabulous for racing.
Oh, I suppose.
My ignorance prevented my getting a better price than I had asked.
Yeah. Well, I always look forward to having you on the program, and I want to talk a little bit about why you think Brett Kavanaugh is a strong choice for the Supreme Court. He already has strong opposition, but all they can find so far is he likes baseball and has a frat boy name.
Yeah, well, in our case, we have some really good reasons for liking Brett Kavanaugh. The first is a very simple and basic one. He is an originalist or an original intent guy when it comes to interpreting the Constitution and all statutes and regulations. He wants to know, what did the authors mean by this? When he gets the answer to that question, that's how he applies the law. And that is really precisely what our legal system is designed to accommodate. We're supposed to have laws written by legislatures and interpretations and applications of the law by the executive and the judicial branch. And the judicial branch is supposed to apply the law as it was intended by its author. So that's our first reason. But also, Judge Kavanaugh has a really strong track record of being willing to say to various federal executive agencies, you have overstepped your statutory limits here, and therefore your regulation is unconstitutional. And that's a good thing, because frankly, a lot of federal agencies do exactly that, and the one with which the Cornwall Alliance is most concerned all the time, the federal EPA, or Environmental Protection Agency, has had a long habit of doing exactly that. So we're excited to see Judge Kavanaugh nominated for the Supreme Court, and we think that it will result in a little bit of a clipping of the wings of the overly ambitious EPA.
Rand Paul is a little skeptical about Judge Kavanaugh. He's not sure where he stands on some of the privacy issues. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, we've not looked into the privacy issues specifically, but frankly, my reason for supporting the nomination is simply his basic jurisprudential presupposition, and that is, my job as a judge is to interpret the Constitution and the statutes as they are written. And, you know, whether we like this or that policy, whether we like this or that idea, for a judge really shouldn't matter. What matters is, what did the authors of the Constitution or of the relevant statutes mean? And if the statutes contradict the intent of the authors of the Constitution, they're unconstitutional and should be tossed out, regardless of whether I like the statutes or not. So on the privacy issue, as on every other one, I think you start with a judge who's got that presupposition that the original intent of the authors is to be controlling. I think at that point, you've got a good judge.
Okay. What are your thoughts about Scott Pruitt departing from the agency?
Well, we're saddened by his departure. I think he was doing an outstanding job. There were a number of different complaints about alleged ethics violations, and some of those are still under investigation by the Inspector General's office. I frankly think that all of those are going to wind up coming empty.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather sad. He was basically driven out by a left-wing propaganda machine that just wanted to get blood, and I think it got it. Nonetheless, his at least temporary replacement, Andrew Wheeler, who was his second in command, is, I think, equally well qualified and equally committed with Pruitt to pursuing the environmental and economic agenda that President Trump has. And frankly, I think that that is a good thing. Wheeler, I think, is going to continue to pursue the reversal of a lot of the very burdensome and unneeded regulations put in place by the EPA under President Obama.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cal Beisner is my guest on our studio line, founder of the Cornwall Alliance. And Cal, let me ask you about some of the forecasts that were connected to the famine forecast. We were going to run out of food, and it was going to happen fast. That was kind of fake news, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, fake news, I'm not sure so much about the use of that phrase for it. I mean, things get called fake news, and really what they are is just simple mistakes.
Okay.
But in this case, and I realize the article that you're referring to refers to this as fake news. And the simple fact is that for generations, really, we've been told again and again, running all the way back to Thomas Robert Malthus in 1798 in his essay on population, that food supplies would inevitably be outstripped by human population, and we were going to see famine around the corner. Every single generation has had those predictions. Every single generation has seen those predictions fall flat on their faces. Food supplies have grown faster than population ever since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and that has continued in the most recent years. Global and, in most nations, national food production, agricultural crop production, has outpaced population growth consistently, and that is despite predictions that global warming would cause a reduction in food production.
Now, Cal, I know there are a lot of Christians that I think get tagged as people who think that global warming is, you know, something that's gotten overblown. And I know that you've got sort of 10 things that we should know and be aware of, the various religious reasons associated. And I want to get into all 10 of those if we can. I'm trying to pace myself with time.
That's good. Be quick on each one.
No. You don't have to be quick on each one, because I want this to be nice and thorough, and I want to open the phone lines to anyone who might have a question for Dr. Cal Beisner.
Okay.
The car is sold, so don't call about that. But if you have a call about climate change...
40 years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago. If you have a call about climate change, that number would be 877-933-2484. So, Cal, let's get started about number one. There should be honesty and truth in all areas of teaching and research.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Scripture describes God as the God of truth. The ninth commandment forbids us to bear false witness against our neighbors, and Leviticus 19 tells us, "Do not lie to one another." So, I mean, that's a pretty basic religious value. And the fact is that a variety of different claims associated with climate change, and particularly with the idea of dangerous man-made global warming, have turned out to have been, at best, gross mistakes. and in some cases, pretty obviously, falsifications done knowingly by those who did them. A number were revealed in what was called ClimateGate, the release of some 11,000 emails and lots of computer code from the University of East Anglia's Climatic Research Unit back in 2009 and again in 2011, in which we actually see some of the major players in climate alarmist circles emailing each other back and forth, figuring out how to hide this piece of data, how to change the appearance of that piece of data in order to keep up the appearance of dangerous man-made warming. That's rather troubling. And frankly, as a person who highly respects science and is very grateful for its contributions to human well-being, I think it's a very dangerous thing, because that kind of conduct undermines the credibility of science, which means that people then aren't willing so much to support in its quest for solutions to real problems that human beings really do face. So, yeah, number one, there should be honesty and truth in all areas of teaching and research. This is part of why we titled three of our papers A Call to Truth. And those came out in 2006, 2009, and 2014. And all three of those involve a careful intertwining of scientific and economic and religious theological worldview argument that human contribution to global warming is very slight and benign, not large and dangerous, and that therefore we shouldn't be fighting it. As a matter of fact, to fight it is going to harm the poor around the world by raising energy prices.
All right. Number two, Cal, moderate increases in temperature and especially carbon dioxide are a blessing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is actually the fair consensus of most of those who have actually looked at the impact of slightly warmer temperatures on human well-being, especially in terms of agricultural productivity, which is, you know, what we get food from. There's a variety of different books. William Nordhaus, A Question of Balance, Weighing the Options on Global Warming Policies. Bjorn Lomborg, Cool It, The Skeptical Environmentalist's Guide to Global Warming, and others. What we see from history is that consistently the warmest periods have been the periods with the highest crop production and therefore the most widely available and affordable food. That means better nutrition for the poor around the world, which in turn means less disease and longer lives. That's all good, good, good stuff.
It is indeed. Cal, let me take a short break. When we come back, we'll try to get 3 through 10 in. My guest is Dr. Cal Beisner. Well, it's 15 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. My guest, Dr. Cal Beisner, is founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. That web address is cornwallalliance.org. And if you missed any of this interview, you're definitely going to want to go back and hear Cal in the first section use the words jurisprudential preposition, something like that. I'm even too dumb to figure that one out myself here, Cal, so thanks very much.
Well, thanks, Bill.
I mean, come on, that's like 10 syllables. They say people can retain like 7 pieces of info. So yeah. You're way ahead of me, just so you know. All right, let's go back to number three. Biblical justice commands that concern be shown, especially for the poor.
Yeah, you know, the Danish economist Bjorn Lomborg, who is president of the Copenhagen Consensus, brought a group of 8 Nobel Prize-winning economists together, and he asked them, if you had $50 billion that you could spend to make the world a better place, how would you spend it? And they came up with a variety of different answers to that, but all of them put fighting global warming at the very bottom of the list. That was because global warming as a risk to people is an extremely speculative risk, and solutions to it are themselves very speculative and extremely expensive. For example, a full implementation of the Paris Climate Agreement that was reached a couple of years ago in Paris would cost between $1 and $2 trillion every year from 2030 to the end of the century. And it would only reduce global average temperature by 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, that is just simply not a good deal. But that money could instead be used to provide pure drinking water, sewage sanitation, nutrition supplements, health care, electric grid energization of homes and offices and factories, infectious disease control, all sorts of other things that are far, far more effective at improving human health and longevity, preventing premature death. So if we spend that money on fighting global warming, we can't spend it on those things. Poverty is a far greater risk than anything related to climate. So we should be addressing poverty directly rather than wasting money trying to control global climate.
All right, Cal, this one, number five, is the one that feels like the most common sense to me. The Earth is resilient rather than inherently fragile.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole idea of dangerous man-made global warming rests on the notion that our adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere so that we bring it from being 0.28% of 1% of the atmosphere to 0.56% of 1% of the atmosphere. Now, that's a doubling, yeah, and doubling always sounds big, but it's a doubling of an initial teeny, 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 tiny bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that our doing that is going to cause warming so great that it's going to be catastrophic, that it is going to bring awful results for ecosystems and for human well-being, that notion presupposes that the climate system, the Earth as a whole, is an extremely fragile place, and that if you interfere with it somehow, the feedbacks to that, the way the system responds to it, are all going to multiply the damage you did in the first place. I mean, that presupposes an extremely fragile place. And that, I think, isn't very consistent with our understanding that an infinitely wise God designed, an infinitely powerful God created, and an infinitely faithful God sustains this world. And when he had made it all, he looked at it, and behold, it was very good. A very good Earth, a very good climate system, doesn't go off into catastrophe in response to raising CO2 from 28 to 56 thousandths of a percent of the atmosphere.
So I'm just trying to figure out who sounds crazy, Cal Bisner or the people that say New York will be underwater and the oceans will be boiling by 2028?
Well, take your pick.
Well, I'm going to keep my picks secret until the end of the conversation. All right, number six, human responsibility cannot negate divine sovereignty.
Yeah, you know, that's kind Christians of a kissing cousin. Believe not only that God created the world, but that he also continues to sustain it through his son, Jesus Christ. Hebrews 1 tells us that he upholds the earth by the word of his power. In Genesis 8:22, God makes a promise to himself, this is following the great flood of Noah's day, that as long as heaven and earth endure, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, day and night, will not cease. This is, you know, the Hebrew poetry there really has the effect of saying, look, all the cycles on which human life depends, I promise I am going to sustain them. So if we read that with any sense of recognizing the honesty and the dependability of God, we should not be prone to thinking that a tiny, tiny change in atmospheric chemistry is going to cause catastrophe.
Yeah, I would agree. What about human responsibility cannot negate divine sovereignty?
Yeah, well, we are responsible, first and foremost, for obeying God's moral law clearly revealed to us in the Ten Commandments, which, by the way, is why I produced a series of 23 lectures on the Ten Commandments that are available from 10commandmentsvideo.com. I think if this nation is going to have renewal, it's going to come through revival that starts in the churches characterized by repentance for ignoring God's law. So our responsibility is first and foremost to obey God's moral law. And if we will do that, then I think we have his assurance in Scripture that he will sustain everything else around us.
Okay.
It is possible for us to abuse and harm the earth, but we can also learn to handle it rightly, to exercise a godly dominion that enhances the fruitfulness, the beauty, and the safety of the earth.
I appreciate the bonus material because I realize I asked the same question twice. What about human beings do not ultimately control the weather? Because if they did, there'd be no rainouts for picnics or baseball games or outdoor weddings or anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, Scripture tells us that God himself controls the weather. And, you know, a lot of people nowadays don't think that way. But that's the biblical worldview. And as C.S. Lewis pointed out in his Reflections on the Psalms, that worldview is characteristic of a truly biblical Christian understanding of this world. Do we recognize that there is cause and effect in nature? Yes, we do. But we also recognize that God guides and controls all of that. And so when God says, I'm going to send a storm to this place or that place, well, he's going to send it. When he says, I'm going to send a flood, he's going to send it. And when he says, I will never again flood the earth, which is a promise that he made in Genesis 9, then we can know that he will never again flood the earth. No, we don't control the weather. We can make some slight contributions to climate change on a fairly local level. For instance, if we deforest a region, we're going to decrease its ability to hold water and therefore decrease the water available for evaporation, which means that we're going to decrease rainfall there, and the result can be turning a beautiful forest into desert. But that's not the same thing as controlling global average temperature, which is a much bigger and much bigger thing that's way out of our control.
Mm-hmm. Cal, now we should be using all of the Earth's resources, shouldn't we? We should use them wisely and really reject none of them.
Yeah, which is not to say we should run out and quickly figure out the best way we can to exploit and use up and waste every bit of resource that's out there in the world. No, that's not it at all. But instead, we are supposed to do what God commands us to do in Genesis 1:28, where having created Adam and Eve, male and female, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and everything that moves on the face of the earth. We are told in Genesis 2:15 to cultivate and guard the garden. And that instruction in 1:28 to fill the earth tells us that we're also supposed to move out from the garden into the wilderness of the rest of the earth and transform it from wilderness into garden, from a place of chaos to a place of order, from a place of less life to a place of more life. So that's what we're supposed to be called to do, and we can, in fact, do that better and better as one. We're reconciled to God so that our hearts are morally consistent with him. And two, we learn to understand his creation as he designed it, and that's a scientific endeavor. And through the centuries, we've gotten better and better at doing exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Cal, we're sort of running out of time, which is always the case when we speak, because you give us so much great content, and I literally hang on to every word you say. And what I often have to do is go to cornwallalliance.org to review some of the things we talk about, because that's the great place for people to go, cornwallalliance.org. You can actually read the article, 10 Religious Reasons Against Climate Change, written by Mark Paul, the one we've been talking about today. Any other thoughts, Cal, before we sign off?
Well, just that a lot of your listeners might really benefit just simply from signing up for our free email newsletter. They can do that at cornwallalliance.org, and that will keep them up to date with new developments in not just climate issues, but lots of other issues of biblical earth stewardship in contrast.
Well, I know I have signed up, and I've taken advantage of some of your promotional things. I've gotten some DVDs, and the material you produce at Cornwall Alliance is just spectacular.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
This month, by the way, we are we're sending as our gift to say thank you for a donation of any size, a wonderful book called All Things New, Rediscovering the Four-Chapter Gospel by Hugh Welchel.
Oh, awesome.
You can learn how to get that from our newsletter if they'll just sign up.
Terrific. Thanks, Cal. Have a great day.
Thank you, Bill.
You bet. Talk to you next time.
God bless you.
Yep. Dr. Cal Beisner was my guest. We'll take you a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.